Welcome to the English with Kirsty podcast from www.englishwithkirsty.com. Here I'll be sharing with you tips, information and other learning resources so that you can improve your business English. Welcome to episode 186 of the English with Kirsty podcast. Today I have a conversation with you. I was talking to Craig Smith, and he's an editor and a proofreader, so I thought it was a good opportunity to ask somebody who does both what the difference is, because if you need one or the other, it's good to know what they do so you can make the best decision and decide what kind of help you need. So we talk about that, we talk about Craig's new business, and we talk about some tips. Craig gives some tips for you when you're writing and when you're checking your own writing, the kind of things to look out for so that you can put them right before other people see them. So I hope you enjoy this. If you want to find out more about Craig and where you can find him, then you can go to the show notes page, which for this episode is englishwithkirsty.com/podcast/episode186. Hi, so today I'm here with Craig, who's agreed to come on and be interviewed on the podcast. Hi, Craig, good to see you today.
Hi, Kirsty.
Yeah, thanks for coming. I was wondering if you could start just by telling the listeners a bit about who you are, what you do, because I know this has been quite an interesting year for you in the last 12 months or so.
Yes, sure, yes. Hi, everybody. My name's Craig Smith from CRS Editorial. I'm a business I set up in October of 2020, just on the back of a redundancy, which was unfortunately COVID-related in September of last year. So I'm an editor, proofreader, copywriter, and journalist with over 20 years experience of working across many different formats with different sized organizations and for a wide range of target audiences.
Yeah, it sounds like you've had a lot to do in the last few months. What would you say is one key thing that you've learned during that time?
I would say that one of the key things I've learned during that time has been all the different elements of which I brought together. So before, I had kind of the comfort blanket of working for an employer for all of my career to date, really. But now I've gone solo. I'd say the biggest thing I've learned has been just learning about different elements as well that go to having a business of your own. So all about self-assessment, tax returns, about these different things that you need to just kind of now think about as a sole trader, really. And just I've really valued the help and support that people have offered too, which has been fantastic because, as I say, I was new to this, so it's only, 6-7 months old now, so it's just been really heartwarming, the support that people have offered. And yes, I have the pedigree and the background of editorial and proofreading, copywriting, but just learning about different parts as well, and the help that people can offer, and the support that and advice that people have given me really has just been invaluable.
Yeah, that's really good to hear, because when I think back to my experience of setting up my business, I got the things like I went on a course about tax returns and learning how to do that, because right at the beginning I didn't want to pay someone to do that because, you know, I was a new business. In fact, I still don't. But a lot of things you can either learn to do or get someone else to do. But if you get someone else to do them, obviously you have to pay for that. But I made that mistake. I didn't find a lot of other people working for themselves at the beginning. And I really wish I'd done that a bit sooner, because when I did, there is a lot of help out there and people are willing to pass on tips or things that they've learned, or, you know, other ideas for doing things that you may not have come across before. So I think it's really important when you are learning to be that person who does everything, you know, like you do the marketing, you do the job that you're being paid for, but also all the other things like the bookkeeping and the, I don't know, promoting of services and customer services. It's a lot to do at the beginning.
There's certainly a lot involved. I've really enjoyed it though. I mean, it was a step outside my comfort zone, as you can imagine, but I think that's what's been such a challenge and so enjoyable too. I won't try and dress it up like in September, October of last year, when it was all new, I had an element of fear to it. Of course I did, because it was stepping into the unknown. But as kind of the saying goes, you kind of faced your fears. I faced my fears. And as the days, weeks and months go by, I'm just more and more excited about just embarking on this adventure, really. I mean, it's still in its infancy, just as I say. So it's the supportive elements of social media and also networking sites that I've been members of or been a member of have been, as I say, just absolutely fantastic, really invaluable.
Yeah, and you never know who you're going to meet as well. You know, like, you know, one thing can lead to another, whether it is work or somebody who can introduce you to someone else. I've been doing more of that recently. I just think it's fascinating that, you know, the people you can meet just by doing that, you never know who's going to be there or who they might know as well. It's not just, you know, I met you through someone else, so there's a case in point.
Definitely. So
going back to our what you were saying before, like the listeners, maybe if you could help us to understand like the difference between proofreading and editing, because I think there are some very distinct differences, but I think sometimes people kind of lump them in together and don't really see. And it's important to know the difference, because if you need one, like if the people listening to the podcast need one, then it's good to know what's offered in both services and what people are most likely to be looking for.
Definitely agree with that. Yes, there's distinct differences. Yes, there's editing and there's proofreading. So, I mean, at the very top level of an edit, I would say that there's the content edit and the copy edit. There are other sections as well, but we'll just keep it for these two for now, if that's okay. So copy editing is kind of the crux of an offer, really. And that involves kind of editing fresh from the source. So the author, really, if I receive an author's manuscript, the purpose would be initially to check for like the likes of typos, basic grammar, inconsistencies, style, if there's a house or a preferred style, the structure of the text, and to raise any editorial queries that I may come across relating to sense, references, abbreviations, that kind of thing, really. And I would also say that a copy edit also incorporates offering minor suggestions to the author and recommendations as to what they may not have even thought of to look at. The second part of the editing, I would say, as I mentioned, is content editing. And I think there's an element of crossover with a copy edit, but a content edit, it kind of delves deeper into the editorial process, including things such as the likes of restructuring and conducting more research into queries concerning references and abbreviations. And I would say that a content edit too can also initiate suggestions to the author for potential rewriting if that's something that is required. But in my experience, 9 times out of 10, I've found that it tends to be the copy edit that people are after, really.
They know what they want to say, but so they aren't necessarily looking for additional material, but they want to know that what they've got is at a good enough standard and that they haven't overlooked things. Because I guess it is easy when you're really familiar with the text. It's your text. You don't see the things that are obvious to someone coming with a new, fresh pair of critical eyes to see what the author may have missed.
I think that's it, Kirsty. I think you've hit the nail on the head there, because people are so passionate about their content, their business, the purpose for which they are writing, they can also be too close to it almost, mm-hmm. because they're so passionate and seeing it just through their passionate business eyes, that if you kind of get somebody to have a little look at it who's removed from that, because a lot of the resources that I've worked on previously, we've had a technical expert, so as I say, the author, the subject expert, whoever it may be, whatever subject it may be. And we've also kind of teamed that up with some editorial expertise who's like removed from the technical area, mm-hmm. but can bring other suggestions and recommendations to the party as well, almost. So, you know, it's up to them then as to see whether they want to incorporate them. But it just gets people thinking in a different way, I'd say. And that is different to proofreading as well, which I believe you mentioned proofreading before. Yeah. So to me, a proofreader is almost a second pair of eyes to read through the content. So you've got, it tends to be the case that you would have an editor looking at, so say like an example of a published book, whether it be in print or digital format, it doesn't matter. The recommendation I think would be to have an editor edit the manuscript in its raw form from the author. And then presumably it would then be designed or typeset or whatever may occur to it to actually, you know, add some color to it and some graphics and such like. And then the proofreader tends to begin their work when the document has been designed slash typeset, because everybody's human. So the editor may have missed something. The designer putting it together may have missed something. We know this, we're all too familiar with this and going between different programs. If an editor's working in Word and a designer is working in InDesign, say, there can be particular gremlins between those two programs, which the proofreader would pick up on, because it may be issues with formatting, pagination, widows and orphans on lines. So that, I would say that's just some of the things that a proofreader would pick up on. Ultimately, the job of a proofreader and an editor are to see things from the reader's perspective, I would say. So just to break things down and ensure clarity of message, really. And a proofreader is just a fresh pair of eyes to the project, really, that can really help to offer some clarity, really, and bring us some suggestions.
And also, I think for things that obviously, you know, you may be writing for a very specific type of audience that does have technical knowledge, but if you're writing for people in general, it's easy to forget what you know and what's really obvious to you. So even if something does, you know, grammatically make sense, it may just be that that's not clear to somebody who's not familiar with that particular area of work or who isn't an expert like you are. So sometimes it's just good to make sure that somebody reading the document for the first time is actually able to understand what you wanted them to and to follow what the person is saying. And that's another way that a fresh pair of eyes can help with that, because, you know, it's clear that some things haven't been explained very well if you're just seeing it for the first time.
Yeah, definitely. I'd say that's quite a critical thing, because I think also as well, in addition to the point that you mentioned there, is the some of the language used, I think people sometimes need to be a little conscious of who their target audience is, who will be reading this. Because, you know, somebody will really know their field in which they operate, but they may introduce acronyms, first of all, and abbreviations without actually saying what that means. And I think they're only little things, but I think it's things like that that a proofreader certainly can clarify, because, you know, they will look for, have we mentioned this term in full at the first mention, and will people then know what it means? Because as I touched upon before, it's kind of just having the end reader in mind, really, whether it be print or digital format, a website, blog, a book, whatever it may be. Because, yeah, I mean, I think you can be too close and almost too technical in some regards, because, of course, there's some industries that are more technical than the others with different jargon used. And I just think just having that awareness of just being conscious of, you know, will people understand what this means in the current form it's written? So I think that's kind of where the different fusion of copywriting, editing, proofreading can kind of overlap in certain areas, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And I was just thinking when you said that, like, some of what I do is, because I speak German as well, so I can have the original German source text and then look at the English version. So it's not translating it. It is kind of proofreading it, but also looking out for things that may be correctly translated but make no sense to somebody who isn't living in Germany or aware of some things that are specifically related to German culture and that may need to be explained in the English version, or checking the tone of the piece, that it's the same kind of tone in German as in English, rather than being like really kind of informal in English for something that's quite you know, a formal business document. So to make sure that it carries across from, as it's transferred from one language into the other or from one culture to the other, there's also those things to consider as well.
Yes, definitely. And just touching on the different areas there, so you mentioned German. So the example I use quite often, and that everybody notices really because of the American programs that we may use, there's often a misconception that proofreading is, oh, I'm able to use a spell checker, therefore I'm okay.
Mm.
Which I feel quite strongly against that, to be perfectly honest, Kirsty, because there's elements. I mean, take for example Microsoft Word. If we're all working in Word, the chances are, even though you will set your program to, or you may set your program if it's for a British audience, to British English, if it defaults every now and again to American English, which I found that does happen sometimes, you know, words like organization with a Z instead of an S, you've got flavor, color, just three words that come to my head now. But I think things like that just show the differences as well when you're writing for different audiences, and just ensuring it is fit for purpose, as you mentioned with the English and German examples.
Yeah, and there's nothing worse than a document that's got both in it. It keeps swapping between that. I really don't like to see that. It's one of the things that, yeah, when I'm correcting things, or you know, you can see that somebody has done what you said and maybe isn't even aware of it, but it looks untidy because you've got both of the types of spellings in the document. You, what would you say is like your favorite type of text to work on, and what are you really interested in doing more of?
My background, I've worked 15 years at a sports coaching publishers, and the 20 plus years experience I do have in editorial, in editing, proofreading and copywriting have mainly been in the sports, health, leisure and fitness world. So I'd say that's where my area of expertise is, or certainly has been. But I'm just interested in words, really. I'm passionate about other people's work hitting the mark for which it's intended as well. So I mean, a case in point, recently, the last big chunky resource I got my teeth into for a proofread was just late last year, which was a near on 400 page book for the national curriculum in PE and school sport and physical activity, which was really enjoyable because it brought together, like, there was three authors working on that publication, and it was just ensuring a common voice throughout, and terminologies, as we mentioned, so not having, you know, maybe organisation with a Z in one instance and S in another, things like that, just to use that example, just ensuring it's consistent throughout. So I had that element. So that was my last big meaty project that I got my teeth into in a sports capacity. But I've since kind of diversified as well, and I've just recently proofread a historical fantasy fiction novel, which has been really, 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 really enjoyable.
Yeah, that's really different as well from what you're doing before. But I think it's the same kind of, the same principles apply about helping people to get their message across, whether it is a PE book or a fiction novel. So yeah, I think that must make the work quite interesting as well.
It really does. It really does, yes, because there's a whole range of subjects that you read about. So aside from the PE and sport and fitness, there's promotional content for a garment labels company that I did. There was people's social accounts, just the about page, which I've had a little look into in different sectors. And then, as I say, when this came about, just to proofread this fiction novel, it was really interesting, and it was almost akin to, it wasn't work, it was that enjoyable. It was just sitting back on an afternoon and just reading it, it was just lovely. It was really, really enjoyable.
Paid to do something you enjoy, it's always good.
It is.
We touched a bit on the, not using the spell check and relying on it completely. And also because of other words that go through, like I saw a website with lick here written all over it, not click here, because lick is a word, not the right word. But if you can think of, maybe give us some tips of, because you must see a lot of different people's writing. So some of the things that people regularly get wrong that would be easy to fix. So people who are interested in their writing and improving their writing, maybe you could give them a couple of takeaways, things to look out for in their own writing to try and improve it.
I shall try. I would say the biggest one is just be mindful of inconsistency. It may be of the tense used. It may be character names in different books if it's fiction, or indeed, for fact in case study examples in fact-based books. There's sometimes those things that occur. I'd say checking the layout of the resource as well. And just one of the biggest things that I've noticed when a document does come out of design, so when it is going to be proofread, is, or even before that stage actually, when it comes in its raw form, the inconsistency of page numbers from the contents page to the actual body copy. I've noticed that that's quite a prevalent thing, really. And as for a tip I could give people, I'd probably say just get somebody else to look over your work as well. Whoever it may be. I mean, of course, a qualified editor and proofreader will more likely pick up things that another person may not. But just having a second pair of eyes look over the work, and if that's not possible, then certainly stepping away from your screen, like they say, and, you know, go for a walk or come back to it a couple of hours later when your mind's fresh, and even though you will still be honed in on the words you're seeing because you've only seen it a couple of hours previous, it stands to reason that you're going to be fresher. So, as I say, you can become too close to your work. So I think ultimately what I always have in mind when I'm editing, proofreading or writing is that everything that's being produced is for a target audience in mind. I'm always mindful of just having that, of just thinking of that audience, and just, you know, maybe every page or every two pages, just kind of thinking, am I still thinking of that audience? Am I still thinking of that audience? And I think that can really help then. It can kind of just almost kind of retune your mind to think, oh, I may drop some of these technical jargony bits if they're not required, and just make it, not in layman terms, but just make it more understandable to the people who are going to be reading it, really.
Yeah, because ultimately you want them to get to the end, you want them to read all of it, and if they give up halfway through because you made that too difficult for them, then they've lost and you've lost as well. So yeah, I think there's some good tips there, and maybe also to be honest, because I think we all probably know our strengths and weaknesses. And for example, I know that if I step away from something, I will probably see some problems with words, but I'm rubbish at formatting, and that's probably not going to change. So when I do ask people to look over my stuff, I kind of say as well, and can you pay special attention to that? Because I know it's not something that I'm particularly good at. So I think it's okay if you're asking someone to help you also to be honest with if there's anything that you want them to look at specifically, to let them know. I mean, it's probably obvious with my formatting, that's quite an obvious example, but you know, if there is something that regularly trips you up, just to either be more aware of it when you're checking, or also, you know, let someone else know to maybe look out for that as well.
Definitely, yes, because we all have our strengths, we all have our weaknesses, don't we? So
just to finish then, could you tell us where people can find you if they want to find out a bit more about what you do or have a chat with you? How do they find you online?
Yes, certainly, yes. So just the last couple of months, I have set up a website, which is at crseditorial.co.uk.
Okay.
Cool. Thank you. On the on that site, you'll see there's interactive links there for my Twitter and LinkedIn, and also on the website as well, you will be able to see, if you're interested, there's examples of different types of writing, different blogs, and different organisations that I've worked with. And yeah, that's it really.
Okay, yeah, I'll put all of those links on the show notes page as well, so people can click through to them from there. And yeah, thank you for your time today. Thanks for talking to us, and thanks for sharing your knowledge as well, because I think it's really good. Like, this is something I haven't looked at before on the podcast, and I'm sure it will help people. So thank you for that.
Thank you very much, Kirsty, and thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the English with Kirsty podcast. If you have any questions or comments, my email address is kirsty@englishwithkirsty.com, or you can go to www.englishwithkirsty.com/podcast, where you'll find information about the individual episodes.